Mike here, LexCoachMike.com. Premium guys, I love you to death. Give me just a second to gush here, right? Podcast today is with Coach Tony Seaman. You're probably aware he's now down at St. Andrews in Boca. Amazing Division I coach. He took three different schools to the NCAA tournament, Division I. 19 times he took teams to the NCAA tournament. The interesting thing, unlike most college coaches today, Coach Seaman was a JV middle school coach, was a high school coach, had these great college coaching career stats, is now down at St. Andrews, a great program in Boca, and is the assistant general manager, head coach for the Denver Outlaws. What I want to say is back in 2009, he came on our LaxCoachMike.com and gave credibility to my site in conjunction with maybe Coach Berkman. There's probably more I learned from Coach Seaman that you'll hear in this podcast in drills and the way he looks at things and what he does. He was a transition coach back in the early 2000s before transition was popular. And has always been that way. If you ever get a chance to see him in a coaching clinic, he's downright hysterical, got a great sense of humor, kind of guy that people love to play for. I had a team in Baltimore one time that got rained out, and he invited us to take a tour of Towson, set us up with tickets. Just an amazing guy, and I owe so much to him. So after 9 years, the opportunity to get him back and hear how he's changed the way he practices and his philosophies now, both from a high school and a pro level, is really, really interesting stuff for me, and I hope you enjoy it. Without further ado, here he is, a guy that has influenced me greatly, and I hope gives you some great ideas as well. Coach Tony Seaman, St. Andrews, Denver Outlaws.
Hey, 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 this is Last Coach Mike here, LastCoachMike.com. Love you guys to death. I am so excited I can't even sit down. We're recording live from the world headquarters of LaxCoachMike.com today, and we've got a guy that's been instrumental in my coaching over the last 10 years or so, and somebody that has just absolutely personified what it's like to be gracious in terms of helping other coaches. And I'm a jackass for not having him back sooner, but when we first got started 8 or 9 years ago, man, he was instrumental in getting us going and gave us credibility immediately. Welcome, Tony Seaman, now at St. Andrews in beautiful Boca. Coach, how's your tan?
Hey, I'll tell you what. We've had 3 months of no rain, and the weather's been 75 to 85 and gorgeous and no humidity, and should have done this 20 years ago.
Hey, Coach, I have to, before we start talking about practice, I have to tell you, man, I listened to the 2009 podcast, and I encourage the listeners to go back and listen to it, too. Great stuff, great stuff. But at the time, you know, I had no idea how progressive you were, literally 10 years ago in the way you designed your practices. And, you know, you always had a reputation for kind of a ball movement, up and down, transition kind of coach. But now that we've been interviewing coaches and, oh, Lord, Coach, I think I have 155 hours of podcasts in our library or something like that with great coaches like you. You know, how much transition you integrated into your practices even 10 years ago that I've only seen coaches start to implement now over the last 5 or 6 years. And so not only are you like an awesome guy, I'm patronizing the shit out of you, aren't I? Not only are you an awesome guy, but very, very progressive in the way you practice. And I can't wait, you know, to hear if this stuff has kind of remained consistent or if you've made some additional changes. You know, at St. Andrews, and I want to touch on the practices for the Outlaws a little bit too. Anyway, Coach, when we started before the practices started out a little bit traditional in terms of stick work, back then it was even 35 to 40 minutes, I guess, of stick work, and that included ground balls, throwing and catching. And one of the things that, you know, I've used personally that has helped me, and I really, you know, had it reinforced by working a lot of camps with Coach Berkman, was even the throwing and catching drills a lot of times culminated in a shot integrating kind of a right-hand, left-hand touch, a roll, dodge, a split to a right-hand, left-hand, whatever it was, but ending up in a shot just to make it more fun for the kids and trying to multitask at the same time. Are you still starting your practices with a traditional stick work?
Absolutely, absolutely, especially now that I'm back in the high school area with kids, although in college as well. If you can't pass and catch, you're not going to be a very good team, no matter what kind of X and O genius you are as a coach. So you got to have those kids who can pass and catch, and then you got to have kids who, yeah, I love the kid who shoots at 100 miles an hour, but he can't make the 5-yard pass under pressure because this ball is going to whip out of his stick and come down and probably break his right toe. And that's as frustrating with the pro player as it is with the high school or college player. So we work on fundamentals all the time. I think that it's a good 25 to 30 minutes for sure every day. And a lot of that 25 or 30 minutes, 5 or 10 can be pure passing and catching, but a great deal of it always ends up in shooting. You can't shoot enough. It's the only way to win games is to score goals, and the only way you score goals is to be able to shoot the ball. So,
you know, it's kind of ironic. I don't think, let's just say back when you and I were younger and leave it at that, you know, I can remember spending some time in Michigan and going across the bridge to Windsor and playing in a box leg. And I can remember the, you know, way back then, and I'm, God, I don't even want to date myself, you know, but I'm probably talking 30 years ago. The box sticks and the Canadian sticks were always so much deeper than the players from the States, you know. And you could literally check the ball out, or check the stick out of their hands, and the stick would spin in the air and the ball would stay in it, you know, those old Canadian kind of sticks. Now it's almost the opposite, isn't it? I mean, the Canadian pockets seem to be shallower, so they can throw the slip pass or throw the 10 or 15-yard pass at 60, 65 miles an hour or 50 miles an hour, whatever. But, you know, in the old days, it seemed like the Canadian sticks were deep, and the kids from the States, they weren't as deep. And now it's almost just the opposite for the reasons that you just said.
Yeah, well, first of all, the Canadians played so much box and not enough field that they needed that kind of ball to come out. And the close quarters, they were checked so much that they had to make sure that they needed their stick. And that's why all of them play so much better behind their head with their head of their stick than any American kid. American kids are always taught from the first day they're a little tot and they got a stick in their hand the first time to have their stick out in front of their face and catch the ball and let it come back in their stick as they move it backwards. But the Canadians, if you watch them, everything's behind their head because they're always in cramped corners inside the box, and their stick work is really so much better than ours, and their sticks are so much harder to check because everything's from their shoulder back, and that gives them great protection. And it's because of the box. I mean, I think a lot of them, American kids, are starting to play box, and it's getting promoted throughout the country, and I think it helps their stick work so much when they do that.
Hey, two comments. First, you know, Huntley had a unique perspective on that. Huntley told me over and over, and it was fascinating to me, that the American kids couldn't catch the ball in front of their face. You know, taking the stats, which most people have no idea, you know, the way the pro outdoor league has become analytical in a lot of ways, with the shooting stats and the great stats that are available to the pro teams. But he made a comment, the kids catching the ball across their face, and what he meant by that was always having the stick to the inside, and the data supported a much higher percentage of shots going in the cage because those kids were catching it with the stick inside. And the you know, it was revolutionary to me because, you know, for 20 years we had been telling our kids outside shoulder, outside shoulder, outside shoulder, you know.
I think the Canadian kid had to catch it that way because he only had one hand. He never bothered with his
No, own no, hand. Exactly. Yeah. You but, know, I mean, it was an interesting way to put it into perspective.
Yeah. But at the same time, my belief, and from everything I watch, is that American kids can't catch the ball behind their heads or back by their ear. They have to have their stick out in front of their face on their stick side. So if they're a right-hander on the right side and out in front of them, and that allows defenses to check their sticks and causes catching in closed quarters much more difficult whereas the really good Canadian players who play a lot of box all catch the ball behind their head, and they can also do that to their opposite side without changing hands, which I agree with Huntley. There's 5 American kids who can do that out of every 100 Canadian kids who can. But so that's my, you know, the thing that I believe in. I think that I try to get our kids. I think if you catch the ball one-handed, you tend to catch it further back behind your ear, and that's a better place to catch a ball. That's thrown to you on your stick side. Now, getting over to the other side is always a thing that has to be, a skill that has to be really worked on.
Coach,
and
aside from
Canadian kids do that well because they are one-handed. Go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to say, aside from, you know, harping on it in practice consistently, I felt like, or I feel like the use of the tennis balls in practice occasionally has really helped me because they have to catch it almost behind their head with soft hands. Are you using tennis balls in any of your drills down at St. Andrews?
Yes. Yes. And I think that's a great drill to use, tennis balls in close. I don't think that we ever work on finishing the ball enough in close from 5 yards and into
right.
the crease. We always say to a kid, how the hell can you miss that shot? And then at the same time you say to yourself, well, when do I ever practice that shot? Other than what he does, and the reason most of us don't practice it is because you don't want your goalie getting killed. So what I have found is not only does it help the shooter, it really helps the goalie with tennis balls because he doesn't mind getting his body in front of it. And he doesn't mind really trying to match stick on stick. And so it's a great source for him to get better, and it's a great source for your shooter to get better hands and be able to really fire the ball without worrying about hurting his best friend who's in the goal. So
yeah, we probably use them.
I think it's a great idea.
We probably use them once a week, and then we play tonight. So our practice yesterday, you know, we literally spent 12 minutes, which, you know, in the way we run drills in today's world is pretty long drill, actually. You know, just with the guys coming in from a line and 3 or 4 lines up top, guys just feeding them, you know, and they got to run through the catch. And, you know, running, I have found that trying to focus on running through the catch almost forces them to have the stick behind versus standing still.
Yep.
You know, when they catch. And with the tennis ball, same thing.
Yep. I agree. And, you know, you got to do so many things. Everything you do in this sport's got to be running. So anybody who's running drills where it's just step down shooting all the time or is standing still and throwing the ball across to somebody else, that's really.
So, Coach, once we get by that tennis ball and the shooting, now where are we going to go?
We're going to break up into the offensive end and the defensive end with their respective coaches. And offensive guys are going to work on some shooting for sure. And most of that will be on the run. And we try to do all the shooting out of sets or places where they would get shots on the field from with what we're running. And try to be as original to the game as possible instead of just practicing standing still and shooting the ball or in spots where you would never shoot the ball. So just a really funny story. I remember when I was in high school and my basketball coach, we were down at halftime and we weren't playing well, and he was really annoyed, and he screamed at all of us and told us to get upstairs and warm up and shoot the ball from where you shoot it from in a game. And we went upstairs, and I see this ball being bombed from outside. I'm like, who is shooting that? And I look over. It's my best friend. He's on the bench where he was in most games, and he's throwing balls from the bench.
Oh, hysterical.
Yeah, he got thrown off that night. But so anyway, that's what we try to do with the offensive end. And the defensive end, we're working on ground balls to start off with. A lot of drills there, and then we try to do a lot of situation things again. And I think two of the hardest things are playing picks defensively, and also when you slide, when you're the hot guy or the slide guy, is to take a really good angle at the ball carrier that you're sliding to. So we break that down and try to work on that a lot. And then some more stick skills with our defensemen, because you really want guys who can handle the ball off the ground and can get it and pass it and get it upfield. And then we'll just work on some individual stuff, just foot drills. And, you know, I think staying as basically fundamental as we can And then as I've mentioned many times to many people, if you take one thing home from a clinic that I do, that the biggest investment and the best investment you can ever make is to take your broken shafts and put a head on each one, so that the length of the head and the shaft together is about 30 inches.
Or so.
And,
inside joke, sorry, listeners.
And we use those instead of their long poles because I think it teaches them to use their feet and their body more correctly than they do. They get really bad habits with the pole and think that's going to do all their work for them. And I think it's so important to be a good defensive player to use your feet and great body position. And so we give those to them. I think they're the most hated weapons on our field. Every time I say, go get the nubs, so you can hear the defense and all groan. But and then we'll combine the offense and defense together after about 20 minutes of being apart. And
yeah, let's stay on the nubs a second, Coach.
I am. And we keep those nubs in their hands.
You converted me even before 2009 at one of the IMLCA messages. And now it's so funny. I mean, it's probably like four times a year, you know, and you're sitting on the beach and your ears are burning and you don't know why. Let me share with you why. I don't do a lot of coaching clinics and none of it is my stuff. You know, people want to know, you know, describe how Princeton runs a practice, describe how this, describe how that. You know, Brody Merrill said one time, I want you to come to the Hill Academy for a coaching clinic. And I'm going, what could I ever offer to Brody Merrill, you know? I mean, really? That's so stupid. And he's going, if I want to know the difference between a Princeton practice under Tierney or under Bates, you're the only guy in the country that can tell me. You know, and the Q&As are all about, you know, this coach is so good at this, they're known for this, and, you know, I have a presentation, but, you know, the Q&A is just guys wanting to know about how do they practice this, you know, and what's the difference between this practice and that practice at these two, you know, prestigious programs. But anyway, one of the questions that comes up when I talk about defense is, taking away the high side and whether you're going to go cross-handed or switch to left-hand if you're trying to reduce the guy driving from the high side. I mean, that used to be a bar fight 20 years ago between coaches.
Absolutely.
And I talk about nubs, you know, and everybody in the audience, you know, and some of these, I got 150 coaches in the audience, you know, and they all talk about, yeah, you know, we use a 12-inch nub and that's old news and blah, blah, blah. And I said, you know, I always tell them, I said, man, I'm going to tell you what, I got the greatest tip from Coach Seaman. You know, we put heads on those, and even if we have to broken heads, you know, because we don't have big budget and stuff like that. Or your recommendation was to go to Play It Again Sports or even Dick's and see what they had old laying around and make them an offer. And
exactly.
I think you had one for all your defensemen. You know, I have five, you know, that I carry in my trunk. And again,
perfect.
You know, whatever the distance is, that's small. And I use it as much to try and coach where we want to drive the guy into the slide. But one of the things I loved from you was the element that you just mentioned, the guy not necessarily banging on the people. But if I remember correctly, you'll actually play things out there, and those guys will have to pick up ground balls with those sticks.
Yeah, and they've got to do it with two hands, not one. They can't lean down and golf it. Yeah, they have to bend it over. And for defensemen, they're so spoiled with a long stick, they rarely ever bend over. So it's a good – and then if you're a believer in transition, which I am, I think one of the biggest other tips I can ever give any coach at any level is when a ball goes on the ground, don't blow the whistle and stop. You're mad because maybe the offensive didn't do it the way you wanted them to do it and the defense got the ball on the ground or somebody missed a pass. Let them play it. Let them pick the ball up. Let them clear it past midfield. If you're going to be a transition guy, you got to practice that. And you can't – so many times in practice, it's so easy just to blow the practice. Blow the whistle and stop the practice. And you don't get that ground ball situation, and then you got to create it some other time. So this way you can put it in part of your whole practice. So I try never to stop practice when a ball goes on the ground. Somebody's got to pick it up, somebody's got to pass it, and they either got to clear it or continue the offensive end. So I've always found that to really be a very big positive part of practice.
I'm a disciple, man. I'm so much a disciple of yours. This year I was coaching at a new program for me, and, you know, they ran sideline to sideline. I mean, I don't really yell or swear. I mean, at the high school level, you know, what I'll do, I'm not coaching college on the island, you know. What I'll do is three blasts on the whistle means everybody to the sideline. I don't care which sideline, sideline to sideline, down and back, and then immediately right back into the drill. And the moment they don't pick up a ground ball, they get three blasts. And this new team, it was like herding cats, man. I mean, it probably took them about 3 weeks to learn.
Yeah.
Because they were so accustomed from the, every other coach they ever played for. You know, if you're running 3v2 and the ball goes on the ground, bang, you know, it's a new group.
Right.
You know, and
right.
And no, we play it out, you know, and then teaching the guys to capitalize if they do, if the offense can get the ball back, teaching them to capitalize. I mean, at one point, I don't know if it was today or another day, you and I were talking about not a lot of practices finishing in close, you know.
Right.
And, you know, getting that look off of those, you know, 3v2, the pole picks it up, somebody checks it out of the stick, bang, we're back to the cage. You know, teaching guys, there's got to be somebody on the backside pipe. Got to be somebody on the backside pipe. You know, good things always happen on the backside pipe, I always say.
Yeah.
And, yeah.
That's
so
great. That's great clues, great keys, no doubt about it. And I think the greatest idea in the world is for coaches to keep their whistles in their pockets and for referees to keep their whistles in their pockets and their flags in their mouths. And that way,
now, I'm the greatest mediocre coach in the United States as the Tony Seaman disciple.
So anyway, that's good stuff, and I really believe in that stuff. I think it helps. I think it helps your practice, and I think it helps your players, and especially if you're a guy who wants to push the transition. And I just think it's really good, and the riders too, because they figure out that, oh, wow, I got to be part of this, or it keeps going down the other end. And for those programs who only have 18 or 19 guys on their team, you can always put one defenseman, one attackman, and one extra goalie down at the other end of the field. And every time you pick a ball up, the defensive group on the half field thing, you got to clear the ball to one guy over the half field, and he goes down, and it's a 2-on-1. And you learn to finish the ball better down there too. And you continue, and then you can just throw another guy into the practice up on the 6-on-6 end and continue on. So I think there's just little things that you can get done.
Yeah, since I talked to you in 2009, I have to tell you that my the people that are listening right now to the podcast are amazingly sophisticated. I mean, occasionally they'll send an email to a coach or whatever, and I mean, our listeners, I mean, they understand backer zones. They understand. I mean, the guys that listen to us are the junkies, you know. Probably 10% of the coaches, you know, that get that deep into it,
right.
Really want to learn that stuff. You made two comments that I'm going to ask you to comment back on. Occasionally, you know, I'll get a coach saying, hey, you know, we're going to be here, and, you know, would it be okay if I contacted this Division I coach and asked him if my kids could come out and watch practice, you know? Or, I'm visiting family in Baltimore, and, you know, could I go see, you know, a Towson practice or a Hopkins practice or a Loyola practice or something? You know, and I'll say, you know, send the guy an email. You know, and occasionally guys are a little skittish the day before a game if they're really in deep in the skeleton of the scouting report. But 99 times out of 100, you know, they're saying, yeah, sure, come on out. And the coaches spend time. I mean, the guys like you spend time with the high school coach, you know. And if I help facilitate that, I always follow up with an email. You know, I put it on my calendar, and I'm going, hey, man, I'm really curious. And they're surprised that I emailed them back, you know, 2 weeks
right.
later.
Right.
I'm really curious, you know, what did you take away? And invariably, they talk about the attention to detail, specifically two comments you made, in angles and footwork. You know, these are
yep.
two things that I think high school coaches think they probably don't have the time, or it slows practice down if they're into 8 to 10 minute drills and, you know, 200 or 300 touches of practice and all those kind of things. Hopefully they are. But at the end of the day, could you just make a brief comment about what you're doing on the angles or the recovery angles or the guy cutting through the crease behind and the footwork too as well? Because, you know, I get probably 2 emails a month. I can't believe Coach Seaman concentrates on footwork as much as he does, you know?
Yeah, I think it's really important from behind the goal that your defenseman, that is positioned when the offensive player is 1 yard from the goal line extended coming from behind, that you're taking away the top side of his stick, the top side of his body. So if he's a right-hander coming from behind the cage and he wants to get to that right-hand side, that the yard before he gets to the goal line, that you've taken that away from him. Your whole body is out, is stopping his right shoulder and right-to-hand sticks from coming around. And then on the other side, you do the same thing so that you make him, if he's going to get to where he wants to go, he's got to run through you. Not, you're not hip to hip. You are outside his hip so that he's got to turn. He can't get there. And the only place he can go is he can try to duck underneath you inside. Then you can push him right into the crease. And if he tries to go outside of you, that's what you want. You want him to veer out wider so he doesn't have a shot. Get him out of that area that we call the danger zone, where a guy has a good shot. And on the left-hander driving from behind, the same thing. You want to take away that left-hand shoulder and the left-hand stick side before he gets the goal line extended and make him turn back. And, you know, the only reason that left-hander is coming on that left-hand side is because he's a left-hander. And I'd much rather have somebody play in their opposite hand than I would in their strong hand any day of the week. So that's pretty much our philosophy here.
So let me ask you a question, Coach.
Yeah.
Is it my imagination, or are you starting to see more teams come adjacent down on that slot?
I think, once again,
It's still primarily a coma or a crease slide on that?
Yeah, that's what I don't see anymore at all, is coma. And I just never see coma. I just see crease slide. And most people have even gotten away from that backside defenseman who's used to be above the pipe when this guy didn't have the ball. Now everybody offensively is teaching that attackman, if that happens, to hang him up and to get him in front of the goal and then get yourself in position behind the goal so that when you receive the pass, he can't get there to play you. And now you've got him hung up. And I think that's the problem with the coma, with coming all the way across. So a lot of most people have gone back to the crease slide. And instead of using that defenseman as the second guy to take your place when you slide, we're now using the opposite up midfielder to come in and take away. So that's the guy who's playing the furthest guy from the ball. So I think that's become much more popular. I think that's especially true at the high school level, although I see very few teams that are coached well enough that they have a second slide, that they get in there and protect the guy that they leave open to go slide from. And it's something that you need to work on all the time, and I think 4-on-4 allows you to do that better than any drill there is.
Yeah.
So I'm a big proponent
of 4-on-4.
Are
you still using the wide formations on that, Coach?
Yes.
Your top and bottom wise? Are you still running as much 4v4 as you did back at Towson?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely. And at the high school level, it's tremendous.
You know, I'm way off of my notes here, but you're just like, you're asking me so many questions that I know our listeners, or you're saying so many things that I know our listeners would want me to ask.
On a 4-on-4, you can also do it so that you can work on two-man plays, which seem to be much more popular now in offense.
Yeah.
I mean, I can remember 20 years ago you said you never pick for the ball because they're going to double you. Never pick for the ball. Now everybody picks for the ball. And you can run that out of 4-on-4 because you got two on top of the goal and two behind the goal, and you can run it behind the goal. You can run it sideways with the top midfielder and the bottom attackman, or you can run it up top with the two middies, or you can run it behind with the two attackmen. So you can get a whole lot done just on four on four with a set of guys. So we'll do that a lot. And offensively and defensively, it's really a good way to practice it and figure out what you want to do. And even at the pro level, we do that all the time. We have such few practices with our guys. We get one night a week, and unless you're Cotto and you cheat and you have two nights a week. But the rule says you only get one. So we bring them in on Friday night, and we practice that by the 4-on-4. And you can really work on picking on the ball and defending at picks on the ball, which more and more teams are doing.
You know, it's interesting, getting to the immense privilege I have, you know, to do 150 hours of interviews like this with coaches. You know, every 2 or 3 years we see a trend, you know, and maybe 6 years ago the trend was, instead of the traditional, and I say that with all the respect in the world, almost Masera type model of fundamentals for an hour, whatever that means. You know, it could be station work,
right.
It could be shooting, it could be, I mean, all those things, right? Skeleton work. And then some transition, you know, and then maybe, I'm being very overly simplistic here, but, you know, 6v6 and then 10v10 and then, you know, man up, man down. You know, we started to see coaches really start to change the sequence of practice, even day to day. You know, so the full field more work might come in the middle of the practice as opposed to the end, or we're going to play 3-1 or work on the face-off wing play in this application. But something, speaking of trends, you know, the one trend I've seen interviewing coaches, you know, once or twice a month is more guys starting to implement 5v5 work into practice, you know, coming off the traditional 4v4 and the Ys, you know, as opposed to running four corners the way a lot of our coaches were taught originally, or
right,
the way they did it originally. And the 5v5 work originally was, you know, we always want to have one good look off the sub game, you know, again, in an overgeneralization, you know. Before it gets to be 6-on-6, we want to have a 5v5 look. Now we're starting to see coaches run 5v5 once or twice a week, trying to get the one additional slide that maybe they didn't get in the 4v4. You know, in the 4v4, at least for me as a coach, and I'd love to get your opinion, man, the first and second slide are relatively straightforward. We can drill that. We can practice that. We can implement that. But sometimes out of the Y formation, you know, if they get that if they're necessitating a third slide, it's almost akin to a skip pass, right? I mean, it's you know, 20 yards
right
away in some cases, and that third slide out of a 4v4 is brutal, you know?
Right.
And I always get defensemen, like my seniors or the guys that have been with me a while, you know, turning around saying, "Coach, that sucks, man. If we'd had another guy, you know, we'd have got there, you know, or if maybe it was an open look inside the hub, you know, and we'd have been there, you know."
Yeah, I think that's
running any 5v5 or playing games with 5v5?
Yeah, you got to build it. Yeah, you go 4-4, then you go 5-5, and then you go 6-6. And I think the 4-on-4, my only response to that defenseman would be, yeah, well, now we're really working on your angle, and it's going to help you if you're doubling or if you're just
great comment,
a ball
great
carrier,
comment, yeah.
Because you got to figure out where you got to slide to him, you're sliding to where he's going to get to. And if he's a long ways away, then that means your angle's got to be that much better and you got to be that much smarter. But, yeah, I think you got to definitely progress up to the 5-on-5 and then the 6-on-6.
See, that's exactly why you're in every Hall of Fame there is, and I'm coaching high school in Georgia and travel teams and talking to people on the telephone sitting on my rear end. So, yeah, once again, you pointed out the difference between the two of us. I'm proud of you. Thank you. I won't sleep for a week now. I feel so bad.
No, all good points that you've made, extremely good, and there are always trends, but it always goes back to who can pass and catch. And, you know, like I say to my kids all the time is, here we don't try to put the guy down the alley. I just find that most right-handers like to be on right-hand side of the field and love to drive down the alley and get a shot off. And so we try to take away strength and make the guy go to his bad hand and keep him there. That's the hard part about that philosophy. Getting a guy to go down an alley is probably the easiest thing in the world to do defensively because he's in the hand he wants to be in. He's going where he wants to go, and you just got to go with him and get ready to get on his hands and stop him from shooting. And the whole time you're decreasing the angle that the goalie has to worry about. I understand that philosophy. But, boy, if you can get people to go in their weak hand and you slide early – and you keep them in their weak hand when that slide comes, it's all over. You're going the other way with the ball because.
So is that slide almost like a backer zone slide, Coach, coming from the inside?
We still come from the crease and we push the guy, you know, in his weak hand, and we know what angle we're at, and he's fighting like hell. So the hardest part of that is to stop your defenseman from overplaying. Once you get him in that hand that he doesn't want to be in, you got to stay on the outside of his back shoulder, and that's so hard to teach because that guy will do anything to stop, turn, and get back into his strong hand. None of us like to play in our weak hand with the ball. So that's the biggest part, and you got to spend hours on it with them to just get them convinced. But once they start believing in it, once they stay on that back shoulder and they don't let the guy turn back, and here comes the double, They're done. That offensive guy is done. So there's only one or two players I hit in the high school that they can play with both hands and really be confident with both hands. So and if
so
any
the original
goalie
defender
the,
is the original defender the recovery guy there?
Yeah, always. Yeah. The slide guy is always in charge. But if we can keep him in his double hand in his weak hand, then we're doubling. We're staying right in it until he gets rid of that ball or it's on the ground. So very little releases if we keep him in as we can.
I'm way off my notes here again, but I have to ask you a question. I think it was 7 or 8 years ago, Bill Tierney was talking at IMLCA, and early in his message, he started laughing, and he said, "You're going to think I'm paraphrasing. I don't mean to quote, you know, great coaches, because I'm 61 and I can't remember what I had for dinner." But at the end of the day, you know, the comment was akin to, "You're going to think I'm kidding, but I'm not. You know, the best check in today's game is probably a no check."
Yep.
And the reason was, you know, you get a great check and the ball doesn't come out. And so, you know, I took that to heart probably in the wrong, I mean, overboard. You know, we really discourage even our most talented poles, unless they're playing, you know, somebody they can clearly dominate, but in a playoff game or against a really good team, or playing the Baltimore Crabs or the Hill Academy or whoever it is in the summer league. You know, we're coaching a lift on the bottom hand. I know some coaches coach a lift on the elbow. Where are you on your coaching philosophy now in terms of takeaway checks versus potentially a lift check? I found a comment interesting, you know, because in many ways, you know, you got to look at Bill Tierney as, you know, almost a patriarch of things that are happening defensively now, you know, with the show slide and all that kind of stuff. Where are you on that, Coach? Are you coaching takeaway checks at the high school level, or are you coaching purely position and getting your body, forcing him to go to that weak hand and then continuation?
Yes, that, and then once you've got him there, or if you haven't done a good job, the lift check is the single greatest check in lacrosse. It used to be everybody said the poke check, but the poke check causes you usually to step toward the player defending, and that's the worst thing you can do. The lift is the answer. If any kid is ever going to learn any check in the whole world, it should be the lift check. And it can be the hand, it can be the elbow. You know, you bury it underneath his arm and just lift. And I haven't seen many attackmen or middies in my life that get anything done when it's happening.
Well, and, you know, the biggest thing, challenge at the high school level is convincing the better players, because when they come out of U15 or they come out of JV, you know, they can dominate. And now all of a sudden you're playing the number two team in the state, and you can't dominate that guy.
Right.
And trying to convince them that the goal of the defenseman is not to take – I'm not talking about 1 minute left in a game and we're down a goal or something like that.
No.
At the end of the day, you know, the goal is not to take the ball away. The goal is to make him not be able to pass or shoot accurately.
Right.
And
absolutely.
And positively reinforce you know, I it's going to sound stupid to you, man. I mean, actually, like, I'm in a new program this year. You know, for the first four games, every time a guy made a lift check in a game, everybody on the bench had to high-five him when he came off for timeout or a quarter, trying to just overload the positive reinforcement for the everybody gets a trophy generation, you know, in a manner of speaking. And I don't say that sarcastically. I'm just saying they respond to peer reward and or at least my experiences, you know, and I've been head coach 40 years. But, you know, I just find that has more – a better effect than me telling the guy he made a great check, even though I got to tell the guy, you know, he made a good lift check too.
Yeah.
You know, when he comes off and he hears it from five teammates, then I think subliminally the teammates are thinking, man, when I get out there, I want to make a lift check. So when I come back, everybody tells me great lift.
Exactly. You know? Yeah, it's a great idea. And if he doesn't see the reward when he does it, he's got to be a foolish kid anyway. I mean, it's amazing because the guy can't do anything. Who he's playing against. It's the other reason that I love the nubs, by the way, getting back to what Coach Tierney's comment was, of course, you know, with that nub in your hand, you're not making any checks. You know, it's all position and it's all getting to where you belong. So, and then you can add the lift to that, then you've got a pretty complete defenseman.
Well, and, you know, like I said, I'm in a new program, and it took a while to, and I haven't gotten there, but I mean, I'm way over the hump of where I was a month ago in terms of modifying the culture and the way they play and the way they're being coached. You know, it took a while to get the goalies to, rather than yell check, in addition to, you know, who's next and who's hot and who's two and all those kind of things, you know, really focus on telling the guy when to lift. If he's running with that guy full speed, you know, I want the goalie giving him a second and a half, I say, or a two-second head start on when he should start to lift the hands, you know, in the estimation of the goalie who's looking at it straightforward.
Yeah, well, that's not bad. I like that. I think anytime my automatic is they get two hands on their stick, you've got a chance to get your stick under that elbow or that hand, and there's two hands on that stick, you're lifting. So I don't care where he's in the field or what he's doing, just lift, because it's automatically going to take that bottom hand off the stick for him, and then he can't do anything.
Yeah, off the air we were talking about, I think all the coaches that are listening to this or listening to me ramble for a half hour know your role at Denver. And, it just so happens I got a player that played for me 3 or 4 years that's the backup goalie out there.
Mike Nugent.
Yeah, and when he came out of your tryout, he called me. I had asked him to. I talked to him semi-regularly. And I said, Nuge, I got to find out, man. I mean, when you sit there in the tryout and you go through the practices, what's the biggest thing, you saw? And I expected him to say, 8 guys that can rip it 90 or 100 miles an hour and pick corners. That's what I expected him to say.
Right.
Even though he's a left-handed goalie. And he said, man, what's crazy is the way these guys talk. He said, I can't believe it. He said, you can't get caught up in not hearing yourself think. He said, there's, for the Denver Outlaws, he said, there is so much talk on the defensive end of the ball. 5 or 6 guys are talking,
Yeah.
And shortly thereafter, I'm trying to think of which college coach it was. It might have been Lars Tiffany. Somebody had a drill where the guys that, in a 5v5 or a 6v6, the guy on the ball and the guys adjacent weren't allowed to talk. The talk had to come from the other three poles or the other three defenders.
Right. That's cool.
As a way of getting guys that aren't necessarily net. I mean, it's a drill, a part of the whole. I mean, I'm not suggesting they don't talk up front, but, I tried that 2 or 3 times in practice and it was a disaster. So I got to go back to that. But I thought that was interesting. And I thought Nuge's comments were really interesting, about the difference between playing college goalie and playing pro goalie.
Yeah. And, here's my number one belief about that. Whenever I hear a coach go, wow, we have no communication. Well, if you have no communication, it's because your kids individually don't understand the defense. Because they can't talk if they don't understand it, because they got nothing to talk about. So they've got to understand what the slide is. They got to understand where it's coming from. They got to understand what you mean by second slide and who's responsible for that. And if I know, then I can tell. But if I don't know, I can't tell anybody or say anything. So when I see quiet people, I know they don't really understand what the hell they're doing. So I just think that's a key.
Yeah, I want to be respectful of your time here. Two things.
I got about 5 minutes.
All right. Even before it was popular to be a transition guy, you've always been known as a transition guy. I love the drill you gave me years ago where it was a scramble, a full field drill, but the scramble was intended for the attack or the offensive and the defensive players in the offensive end to be almost locked on, and then you would roll ground balls. And you had a great comment, I get one guy that can't pick up ground balls, I might roll out 12 in the drill, he's getting 6 or something like that, which
exactly.
I thought was awesome. And you talked about throwing behind your back and stuff like that. 2 quick questions in 5 minutes. Are you still running that drill, Coach?
Yes. Yep. Big part of
it was a full field scramble, but it was almost a scramble clearing drill as much as anything.
Right.
Is that fair?
Right. Yes. Yeah, to pick it up and get rid of it and get it upfield. And when I would at different times blow the whistle and start it somewhere completely else on the field. And then so that you're getting all kind of ground ball situations that you want to create as the coach with everybody out there.
And if the field gets it, they go to the cage.
Yep. If the defense
last
gets
question,
it, they go the other way.
Any new transition drill you picked up on from a coach that the players in St. Andrews have fallen in love with?
Not
really. What's their most favorite transition drill?
I think if we start 4... we put all the black uniform guys at one end, all the red uniform guys at the other end. We put 4 reds out there, and we break the 4 blacks at them from the other end of the field with a 5th guy. So from the line on the side, you got the four out there and a line on the side of the field, and that fifth guy joins them, and they come down on a 5-on-4, and they work it around until they shoot it or lose it, and now they go the other way. The four who are out there go the other way, and one new guy from the line goes, and down at the other end, you got four ready for them to come and try to stop them. So it's a 5-on-4 drill, but instead of doing it at one half of the field and just doing it, now you're running and making passes and going down toward the other end. And you can shorten the field doing that. And we used to call it the West Jenny.
When you say the end of the field, are you talking about the end lines? They're coming that far?
No. In front of the goal. Okay. So they're in the box. Yeah.
Okay. I'm sorry.
We used to call it the West Jenny drill because I got it from Mr.
Yeah.
But it was only three guys against two. And the guy who shot it was out, and the other two had to play defense as three came down the other way. Well, now it's four. It's 5-on-4 instead of 3-on-2. And I think it's closer to game situation, but they love that drill.
So if the defense gets a save or a takeaway, are they going all the way down to the other end of the field?
Yep, everybody, all four of them, plus one more new guy from the sideline.
So one of the things that you've done better than most, of all the interviews we've done, Coach, I mean, it's crazy. You know, you got Bill Tierney, Purdy at Adelphi. I'm trying to think of guys that had a really strong high school coaching background before they went to college. You know, it's just kind of not the way it is in lacrosse. You know,
nope.
the guys I
not anymore. Not anymore. It is, and that's true.
That did more than a cup of coffee. I mean, they may have, you know, got out of school and helped the high school program for 2 years or something. But I'm talking about guys that had a high school, coaching pedigree. And I think Purdy coached some great teams for like 13, 15 years or something. You're able to adapt drills that a college coach would do with a 40 or a 45. Oh, my gosh, now if you're a D3 roster, some of these guys got 75 guys, on the roster.
Yeah.
I don't know how they do that. But you've always been great at modifying those drills for high school coaches or rec coaches that had smaller rosters. You know, we could run this same drill, bringing the cages 70 yards apart versus 100 yards apart.
Correct. Easily.
You know, if you got 19
a great
guys.
Idea. I
yeah.
even say 50 yards apart,
because
then you got a lot more.
I was going to say that, but I was afraid you were going to yell at me, so I didn't want to say that.
No. I think that's a really good idea.
Last one, and let's wrap it up. Coach, you doing clinics anywhere or anything that I can list on my website to help you out? Are you still doing coaching clinics?
I'm available. I don't have any in the foreseeable future, but I'm available.
Okay.
I always enjoy that, and I'm very cheap.
I can tell the listeners this. Not only will you get 9 pages of lacrosse notes, you'll have a better time than you would have had at any comedy club that I've ever been to. God, I'll never forget the department store joke. What was that? I mean, something about going up to the fourth floor of the apartment or something, or the department store or something. I don't know. I think I heard it from you like 5 times, and it was funnier the fifth time than it was the first time, and you're the only guy in my life I could ever say that about.
Oh, God. Yeah, I got a few.
You didn't think I was paying attention, did you?
Oh, yeah. They always remember the jokes.
Oh, goodness. Hey, Coach, continue
well, thanks,
success.
Mike. I appreciate it.
Both at St. Andrews and with the Outlaws. Obviously, I follow the Outlaws pretty close just because of my personal ties. And I just got to say, personally, thank you. I mean, you have made me... people come to me for ideas and coaching clinics and the website and all the stuff, but invariably in any conversation I have with coaches, there's things that I learn from you that come up, and I just think you're awesome in every way, and there's a reason why you're in every Hall of Fame there is, including IMLCA. Anyway, hey, stay with me. Let me thank you. This is Last Coach Mike, lastcoachmike.com. Until next time. Remember, unbelievable responsibility and opportunity you have influencing the lives of these young people. Take it very seriously every day. Until next time, God bless everybody.